This morning's reading will be from Acts 17, 1 through 9, before Mike gets into the study this morning. Now, when they had passed through Amphipolis and Apollonia, I told you I'd pronounce that wrong, Jim. They came to Thessalonica when they were in the synagogue of the Jews, and Paul went in, as was his custom. And on the three Sabbath days, he reasoned with them from the scriptures, explaining and proving that it was necessary for the Christ to suffer and to rise from the dead, and saying, "This Jesus whom I proclaim to you is the Christ." And some of them were persuaded and joined Paul and Silas, as did a great many of the devout Greeks, and not a few of the leading women. But the Jews were jealous, and taking some wicked men of the rabble, they formed a mob, set the city in an uproar, and attacked the house of Jason, seeking to bring them out to the crowd. And when they could not find them, they dragged Jason and some of the brothers before the city authorities, shouting, "These men who I have turned the world upside down have come here also. And Jason has received them, and they are acting against the decrees of Caesar, saying there is another king, Jesus." And the people and the city authorities were disturbed when they heard these things. And when they had taken money as security from Jason and the rest, they let them go.
Good to see everyone this morning. Thank Brother Jim for the reading. As we mentioned, beginning this month, we are changing the way we do the early services since the beginning. There's been a theme every month, and regardless of who was speaking, they did their part of the theme that was assigned to them. What we are changing is that there's still going to be themes, but now there's going to be two themes, because for the quarter, Alan is going to develop his own series, and I'm going to develop mine. I had Brother Jim read the account in the book of Acts, which is the account of the establishment of the church in Thessalonica. And we're going to be looking this quarter at exhortations that the apostle made to that new church. The entire first letter of 1 Thessalonians, in one way, could be viewed as an extended exhortation, because Paul's writing back to them and he's concerned about how they are progressing as a new church that is established, as we see in the Acts account, in the face of persecution almost immediately. He wrote to encourage them. But our series is going to focus upon the latter part of the epistle, the fifth chapter, where Paul draws that epistle to a close with a series of short applications that are applicable to all Christians in every situation. Would have been very applicable to the Thessalonians, but one of the things when you look at this series of exhortations is to see how universal they are in terms of time and place. And so we will be looking, whenever I have the assignment to speak at this portion of our services, to these exhortations that are found in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 12 through 22. And so Paul begins this exhortation with several instructions concerning how the Christians at Thessalonica should view those who provide them with spiritual leadership. The verses we're going to look at in the time we have this morning is 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 12 and 13. But we request of you, brethren, that you appreciate those who diligently labor among you and have charge over you in the Lord and give you instruction, and that you esteem them very highly in love because of their work. Live in peace with one another. Now, this exhortation really contains a couple of distinct exhortations that are related to each other, and that's what we want to look at this morning. First of all, I want to call your attention to the nature of this exhortation. It is a request. Now, this does not mean that what Paul was exhorting them to do was optional. It is that the tone of it is framed as a tone of request. Paul was quite capable of using his apostolic authority to order certain behaviors. The tone of 1 Thessalonians is quite different, for instance, than the tone of 1 Corinthians. And so while Paul puts this in the phrase of, I have a request of you, there's something I want to see in you, I think we would be erring if we thought, well, what Paul is telling us in this series of exhortations is all optional. If we really don't want to do it, we don't need to do it. It's just that his relationship with this group of young Christians is such that he is encouraging them and prompting them to do those things, but they are still the things that they ought and should do. Now, this word request is from the Greek word aretoa. One of the things you'll find, and my wife may leave over this, is that there will be a lot of word studies in this. She doesn't like me to get bogged down in word studies, but I'm going to look at some of the words that are in the text as we go about. And this is an important word. It simply means literally to ask. And if you look at some of the more modern translations, the ESV and the ISV and the NIV, that's exactly the word they use. I ask you to do this. But because of the general tone of the letter and the various ways in which you can ask something, most of the translations we're familiar with use different words. Here in the New American Standard that I read from, it says, we request that you do that. The New Revised Standard says, I am making an appeal to you to do that. The old language of the King James and the Old American Standard and the Revised Standard is, I beseech you, brethren. I'm asking you and pleading with you to have this kind of attitude. And the New King James Version simply uses the word, I urge you to do this. The request is made to brethren. So the conclusion that we can make of this passage in 2021 is that Paul's recommending actions that are appropriate between brothers and sisters in Christ. They are the kind of actions that we ought to exhibit in our relationship with one another. So let's look for just a couple of minutes at the specific elements of this exhortation. There are two basic elements, and then a third exhortation that probably has to do with the results of following the first two. The first is, he says, I want you to appreciate these people. It comes from the Greek word oida, which means to know. And the reason why I want to point that out is that there's another whole group of Greek words from the Greek word gnosko that also means to know. And so in the King James Version and in the American Standard, many times the same English word is used to translate these two different Greek word families. Specifically in the King James, the English word know is the only one they use in any form of these two different Greek words. Now, if you're interested in looking at this, you can go home today, and if you have an English dictionary, look up the English word know. And what you're going to find out is that in English, that word has, it's probably one of the longer listings in your dictionary. Because in English, that word is used probably a dozen different ways. And so it's really important to understand when we look at this exhortation what it is that Paul is asking them to do when he uses this word, you should know those among you. And so the New American Standard, which I use, as well as the International Standard Version, uses the word appreciate. The English Standard and the Revised Standard and the New Revised Standard says you should respect these people. The NIV says you should acknowledge them. The New King James says you should give them recognition. And so it's more than just, well, I know this as a fact. It's how you relate in your knowledge of these people. So it's asking for a certain kind of response from a Christian to these other Christians. So that leads us to the second question about that then. Well, who is it that is to be appreciated? And if we look at the text, there are three distinct descriptions given of these people. If you would look at commentaries, what you would find is a discussion of whether these are three characteristics of one person or whether they describe three different sets of people. And I'm going to tell you, I don't know. When I look at the Acts account does not tell us, that's why I had Brother Jim read it. When Paul and Silas leave Thessalonica, it doesn't tell us who stayed. We have the one native of Thessalonica mentioned, the one who had to pay the bail so that they would be released. And nobody else is mentioned. And by comparing texts like you can in the book of Acts, you get no indication of whether anybody stayed at Thessalonica when Paul and Silas left for Berea. We're only told Paul and Silas left. We're not told that Timothy left, but we're told that Timothy is left in Berea with Silas. And so, you know, you can assume that if Paul and Silas went, Timothy went with them, since Silas and Timothy were left at Berea a little bit later. It could have been an unnamed companion that Luke doesn't name, or it could have been someone or a group of people at Thessalonica in the new church that the Apostle Paul, possibly by the laying on of hands, empowered to function in these roles with the new church that was established there. But for our purposes, and applying it to us today, it could be anyone who met any of these three descriptions. It could all be in one person or a multiple of several people that have all three qualities. Or it could be different people fulfilling different roles in the local church. But the point of what Paul is saying is, as members of the local church, we should appreciate these people. We should hold them in high regard. Well, who are they? First of all, he says, those who diligently labor among you. We don't know who they were, as I've just said. But we have experience in life. All of us have this experience in life. And in most organizations, including the local church, there are always those who shoulder a major responsibility for the work that is going on. You might have experienced that in your secular work, that there's a group of people that work in the office. But there's always a couple that are the go-to people. You might be a member of a community organization, a civic club that does good work in the community. And it may have a large membership, but there'll be a core of people that get the work done. In fact, in management books, it's called the 80-20 rule. That in any organization, 20% of the people do 80% of the work, and the other 80% combined do 20%. And so all I'm basically saying is that Paul says, you know who it is that's carrying the weight of the work at Thessalonica. And you need to appreciate them. As Christians, we need to know. We need to recognize them, but we need to appreciate them and hold them in regard for the work that they perform. The second group is those who have charge over you in the Lord. Now, neither 1st or 2nd Thessalonians, neither epistle by Paul mentions elders. But the Greek word that Paul uses here means to guide, to direct, to lead. Those who are leading the congregation. As we learn in the book of Acts from Paul's first missionary journey, there was sometimes a delay between the establishment of a church and the appointment of elders. In the first missionary journey, we're told of Paul going to those towns and preaching and establishing churches. And then as he returns back to Antioch, he goes back through those towns where he has left small new churches and appoints elders in every congregation. So there may be a congregation that does not have elders, but they will still have leaders. It may be the evangelist himself, or it may be the handful of brethren that decided to start the congregation. My memory goes back to when I was a young child, and the church at Waynesville was established, and it was established basically because of my dad and Brother Charles Thomas, and not too long after it started, Alan's mom and dad were involved. The bottom line on it was a new church. It had leaders even though it did not have elders at that point. In the New Testament, the leadership could be provided by the apostles, as it happened at the church at Jerusalem, until such a time as it also had elders, as the example of Paul on the first missionary journey. The evangelist that was there could provide that leadership. And there was the possibility, as we've already mentioned, that apostles would lay their hands upon certain people and leave them there, giving them the gifts necessary to guide the church until the scriptures were completely revealed and compiled. But I would also say this, when there are elders in a congregation, this exhortation would definitely apply to the Christians in a congregation where there are elders. There should be an appreciation and a regard for them for the work that they are trying to do. Hebrews 13:17 doesn't mention elders, it just simply says obey your leaders and submit to them, for they watch over your souls as those who give an account. Let them do this with joy and not with grief, for this would be unprofitable for you. The third group that's mentioned are those who instruct you, those who give you instruction. I think that's easily understood. You have workers, you have leaders, you have teachers. That's the people that compose a local church, and the entire membership should have an appreciation for them. In Hebrews 13, again in verse 7, remember those who led you, who spoke the word of God to you, and consider the result of their conduct, imitate their faith. So that's the first exhortation. The second exhortation we will not spend near as much time on, and I think it'll become apparent why. The second is you esteem them. And the answer was, well, who are we to esteem? Who's the them? Well, it's the same three groups we were just told to appreciate. So we don't need to repeat all those comments we make. We are to esteem them. And esteem, I checked 12 different translations, and esteem was used in, I think, 10 of the 12. The New International Version and International Standard Version basically translate this word with a phrase that will help us understand what it means to esteem them. Those translations says you hold these people in the highest regard. When you esteem someone, you show them by attitude. That you appreciate who they are and what they are doing. It doesn't mean they're always right. And it doesn't mean you always have to agree with them about every little thing. But it does mean you show the regard and appreciation for the work that they are doing. And then that leads us to the third and final exhortation. Live at peace with one another. Some commentators view this as concluding sentence in verse 13 is a separate exhortation. I don't, because it's actually in the same paragraph in the text. To me, it makes sense to view it as the obvious result that if a church appreciates and esteems those who do the work, those who do the leading, those who do the teaching, then the result of that is they ought to be getting along with one another. That the peace with one another in a congregation ensues the attitudes that would cause people to be appreciating and esteeming these groups of people. On the other hand, if those who compose a local church are constantly at odds with the teachers and the leaders, it will foster a spirit of conflict that will have to influence the members so that there is constant bickering and squabbling that Paul is wanting them to avoid. So Paul begins his extended exhortation that will be the subject of my studies at this time with this one exhortation that emphasizes the unity of the local church. And he will expand that exhortation to other matters that we will study in future lessons. Brother Cliff is going to lead us in prayer, and then we'll be dismissed to class.